I believe what we had done is David is now extremely old. He is on his way out the door. His friends, he couldn't keep warm, so his friends went and found him. They scoured the land for a beautiful young woman. Now, these are friends, okay? I mean, you know, they search. It says from Dan to Beersheba. That is the entire nation. They went and found him a beautiful young lady to keep him warm. Her name is Abishag, and apparently the name does not fit her. It just doesn't. You don't think beautiful young woman when you hear Abishag. You think of someone on a broom, but I do. But anyway.
My mom's name is Abishag.
So, okay. Is she a beautiful? I met your mom. Other people think of a woman on a broom. But she's important, and she's going to be important for more than just keeping the king warm. And we're going to see that very... But once again, I will say it. I know I say it all the time. But every time they say there is a beautiful woman, bad things happen. And it's, once again, it is not the beautiful woman's fault. It is us. It is just, yeah, we just don't know what to do with it. We, you know, it just, blah, blah, blah. And I have noticed this, that as I get older, there are more beautiful women. Because more of them look beautiful to me now. And it, I don't have any idea why. And I just say to myself, wow, there's just a lot of pretty women. And I don't know. I have no idea. It has something to do with getting older. I don't know what it is. Maybe I could just enjoy the fact that they are. I don't know. But here it does create a bit of a problem. Because as he's going out his door, and it's apparent that he's dying, his next son in line is Adonijah. He's the guy that, if you were going in logical sequence, would be the next king. So David has not made a public announcement yet, and he's on his deathbed, about who would be the next king. So Adonijah, wanting to move the process along, thinking it should be him, decides to take action. Now, apparently, David had said, and we don't have record of this, but it's mentioned several times, that David had chosen Solomon already. But he had said it to Solomon's mother, and I believe to Nathan the prophet. I think it's Nathan. Yeah, Nathan. But not publicly. And it really makes a difference. Because if we've learned anything, this nation could sway day to day over who they're backing. And with all the political intrigue that's going on, remember that division between Judah and Israel, the north and the south, is always in play. And people are always politicking between, which is interesting, being we're in this season. This is politics at its finest. And as we've noticed, David was really good at it. You know, every time, David always knew what people were thinking. He knew how to deal with problems before they showed up. He knew how to placate enemies. He knew when not to. Adonijah isn't quite as good at it. Adonijah says, we'll pick up in verse 5. Now Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself, saying, I will be the king. So he prepared for himself chariots, horsemen, and 50 men to run before him. This is the same thing I believe that Absalom did. What he did is he created a victory parade without there being any victory. Instead of having the victory and then having the parade, he had the parade hoping it would bring him a victory. So he gets this big procession, and he goes running through the streets saying, I'm the king. And with all this stuff, his father had never crossed him at any time by asking, why have you done so? And here we have this little caveat once again. And he also was a very handsome man. If we remember who else was a very handsome man, it was Absalom. And Absalom did the exact same thing. He was born after Absalom, which tells you he is the younger brother, but he's the next. What this is telling us is he's the next in line. He conferred with Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and with Abathar, the priest. Following Adonijah, they helped him. Now, Joab is on the outs. Joab knows, I'm sure Joab knows who David wants. He also knows that he is not going to be the head of the army anymore. So Joab jumped ship. Joab has been, while he's that, I don't want to say necessary evil, we'll just say he's a beneficial evil. He has been a thorn in David's side for a long, long time, but he also got stuff done. And because he got stuff done, he got put up with. He was a very mighty warrior, and he won battles. And in the end, that carries a lot of weight. He jumps ship, and so does the priest. This is an odd situation, because Zadok and Abiathar, for this situation with David, was there for political reasons. There were two high priests in Israel. There should only be one. Well, this situation is getting taken care of itself because they're choosing sides. Abiathar, I believe, was the one who helped. Remember the village that got wiped out by Saul? I think he was from that village. I'm trying to remember. But I know his connection to David is deep. He supported David. He might have been one of the ones that gave David the sword when David was on the lam from Saul, remember? So this is a tough... He doesn't believe he's breaking with David. He believes he's going with the person who logically should be the next king. But there's a deep feeling between David and Abiathar. But Zadok the priest, Benaniah the son of Jehoiada, Nathan the prophet, Shemi, Rei, the mighty men who belonged to David, were not with Adonijah. So basically, the people in power, it would be like the presidential cabinet splitting, Congress splitting, the Senate splitting, you know, and they're picking sides. And if you've been around politics at all, you know, it's maybe more visible in small town politics, but people start to pick sides. They start to become buddies. They start to, you know, be friends. And you know that if your friend wins, it helps you. But if he loses, things aren't going to be that well. So it's a gamble. So we have the lines drawn. Zadok the priest on one side, Adonijah on the other, Benaniah on one side, who is David's in charge of the army at this point, and Joab on the other. Now, there's part here that says the mighty men that belong to David. That means a lot. Remember those guys, we read all that stuff about who they were and all the stuff they did? They all stayed with David. None of them went over to Adonijah. And these guys were a force unto themselves. I don't want to say like having the whole army. I'm sure Joab, there was people from the army that went with Joab, but these guys never moved. And these guys were the base of the army. Adonijah sacrificed sheep and oxen and fatlings by the stone of Zoleth, which is beside En-Rogel, whatever that is. And he invited all his brothers, the king's sons, and all the men of Judah, the king's servants. So what he does is he throws a feast. He makes sacrifices. He throws a feast. With these sacrifices, that meat got eaten. So it was basically, it was a sacrifice to God. And what he's doing is he's thanking God for him being king. Which, you know, okay. And he invites his brothers. Obviously not Solomon. And also all the men of Judah, because Judah is David's tribe. So it's a big family thing. He brings everybody up. But he did not invite Nathan prophet, Benaniah, the mighty men, and Solomon his brother. So this is all in secret. Then Nathan spoke to Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon, saying, "Have you not heard that Adonijah, the son of Haggith, has become king, but David our Lord does not know it? So now, come, please let me give you counsel and save your life and the life of your son Solomon." See, this isn't just politics. This is serious stuff. Because Nathan knows that to solidify his control, he's going to kill his brothers, especially Solomon, anyone that has a claim. This is just how this works. I mean, David didn't have that issue. You know, there's no record of David killing his brothers, but, you know, most of his brothers' sons and everything were in his army or on his staff. He integrated all of them. But Nathan knows what he's talking about, and he goes and tells Solomon's mother, "Do you know what's going on? Go at once to King David and say to him, 'Have you not, my lord, O king, sworn to your maidservant, saying, surely Solomon your son shall be king after me?'" This is the part where I said there was a vow made who would be the king, but it was sort of not made in public. I don't know why David didn't do this. "And he shall sit on my throne. Why then has Adonijah become king? Behold, while you're still speaking with the king, I will come in after you and confirm your words." So Nathan, not only being a prophet from the Lord, but knowing how to bring the drama into a situation, says, "You go in first, I'll burst in later, and I'll come in with the same story, and we'll get this thing rolling. So Bathsheba went into the king in the bedroom. Now the king was very old, and Abishag the Shumite was ministering to the king. I have a mental picture of that. Okay. Then Bathsheba bowed and prostrated herself before the king, and the king said, "What do you wish?" Remember, Bathsheba is very near and dear to David. David has 18 wives. She's the favorite. They've been through a lot together. She's just the woman that catches his fancy. She said to him, "My lord, you swore to your maidservant by the Lord your God, saying, 'Surely your son Solomon shall be king after me and shall sit on my throne.' Now behold, Adonijah is king, and now, my lord the king, do you not know it? He has sacrificed oxen and fatlings and sheep in abundance, and has invited all the sons of the king, and Abiathar the priest, and Joab the commander of the army, but he has not invited Solomon your servant. As for now, my lord the king, the eyes of all Israel are on you, to tell them who shall sit on the throne of my lord the king after him." So basically, they're celebrating. Israel's going, what do we do? I mean, the entire nation is watching what's happening. They're waiting for David to say something, and it's getting to the point where if he doesn't say something soon, they're just going to assume this is what it's supposed to be, and this is going to be over. So David, in his old decrepit age, has to get up and handle another order of business. Okay. As for now, my lord, the eyes of Israel. Okay. It will come about as soon as my lord the king sleeps with his fathers that I and my son Solomon be considered offenders. Very blunt, once you're dead, we're in trouble, is what she's saying. You know, once you die, me and Solomon, they're going to kill us. That's basically what she's saying. Behold, while she was still speaking with the king, Nathan the prophet came in. They told the king, saying, "Here's Nathan the prophet." And when he came in before the king, he prostrated himself before the king with his face on the ground. Nathan said, "My lord the king, have you said Adonijah should be the king after me, and he shall sit on my throne? For he has gone down today and has sacrificed oxen and fatlings and sheep in abundance, and has invited all the king's sons and the commanders of the army and Abiathar the priest. And behold, they are eating and drinking before him, and they say, 'Long live the king Adonijah.' But me, even me, your servant, and Zadok the priest, and Benaniah, the son of Jehoiada, and your servant Solomon, he has not invited. Has this thing been done by my lord the king, and you have not shown your servant who should sit on the throne of my lord the king after him?" These two people come. I am starting to wonder at this point, you know, me personally, do they feel that he is to the point where he has to be told twice? Is he having issues getting old and just about ready to die here? And because two times they come into the same thing, and he says, "This thing has been done by the Lord the King. Has this thing been done? And you have not shown your servants who should sit on the throne." So what he's saying is, did you do this and you didn't tell us? And they know full well this isn't what happened. They're trying to get an emotional response out of this guy, and they're trying to get him to do something. The king said, "Call Bathsheba to come to me." And she came into the king's presence to be with the king. The king vowed and said, "As the Lord lives, who has redeemed my life from all distress, surely as I vow to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, saying, 'Your son Solomon shall be the king after me, and he shall sit on my throne in my place,' I will indeed do this today." Then Bathsheba bowed with her face to the ground and prostrated herself before the king and said, May my lord the king David live forever." The king said, "Call to me Zadok the priest, Nathan the prophet, and Benaniah the son of Jehoiada." And they came into the king's presence. So, once again, he still hasn't announced anything, but he's calling together everybody. The king said to them, "Take with you the servants of the Lord, and have my son Solomon ride on my own mule, and bring him down to Gihon. Let Zadok the priest and Nathan the prophet anoint him there as king over Israel, and blow the trumpets and say, 'Long live King Solomon.'" So what he's saying is, put him on my donkey, the official Air Force One of Israel. You know, he shows up on the royal donkey, and having Zadok and Nathan there, everybody knows who they are. Everybody knows. See, they try to balance it out, and they try to give there's no one to balance out Nathan. Nathan's the prophet of the Lord. They don't have a prophet of the Lord on the other side. And Nathan carries weight. And wherever he's walking matters. And it's and they said, call him king, which should put the kibosh to all this. Then you shall come up after him, and he shall come and sit on my throne and be king in my place, for I have anointed him to be ruler over Israel and Judah. Benaniah, the son of Joadiah, answered the king and said, amen. Thus may the Lord, the God of my Lord the king, say. So what he's saying is good. You know, thankfully, it's why'd you wait so long? Why, you know, I don't know why he did. It's interesting because this all could have been avoided. He could have done this, you know. This really isn't this far apart from the rebellion of Absalom. I mean, that is still fresh. Maybe he's thinking, you know, I really don't want to. I don't want to go through this again with Solomon. Maybe he's worried about that. I mean, this is really not far removed. A couple of years, you know, from the time of Absalom's rebellion. I don't know. You know, maybe with that being so fresh in your mind, you really don't want to give any of your sons any power before you absolutely have to. But in this case, the other son makes the move, you know, and is already making the move. But Benaniah, who is the force guy, he's the army man. He's the guy in charge of all that. He finally says, amen. You know, good. It's about time. As the Lord had been with my lord the king, so may he be with Solomon. And make his throne greater than the throne of my lord King David. So Zadok the priest, Nathan the prophet, Benaniah the... I don't know why they always say Benaniah the son of Joadiah. The Cherethite and the Peliathites went down. Those are the two that are the... they're the foreigners that are the guard of David, if you remember. They are the really, really tough dudes. I mean, these... You know, the special forces of Israel. And nobody could really match them. Went down and had Solomon ride on King David's mule and brought him to Gihon. Zadok the priest then took a horn of oil from the tent and anointed Solomon. They blew the trumpet, and all the people said, long live King Solomon. See, that's the idea of the procession. Take him, make a procession. See, they did the same thing that Adonijah did, but they didn't do it with quite the same way. All the other stuff wasn't necessary. Having the king's mule matched everything the other guy that Adonijah tried to do and trumped it. Because that really meant something. And as they were going from here to there, everybody saw it. It was a procession. So when he anoints them, and it says the people, these are all the people that just joined in as it was going. And they know something important is happening. All the people went up after him. The people were playing on their flutes and rejoicing with great joy, so that the earth shook at their noise. Now Adonijah and all the guests who were with him heard as they were finished eating. When Joab heard the sound of the trumpets, he said, why is the city making such an uproar? While he was still speaking, behold, Jonathan, the son of Abathar, the priest, came. And Adonijah said, come in, for you are a valiant man, and bring good news. Jonathan replied to Adonijah, no, our Lord King David has made Solomon king. The king has also sent with him Zadok the priest, Nathan the prophet, and Benaniah the son of... Yeah, I'm going to stop saying that. And the Peliathites. And they can't... They have, well, and they have him made. This is hard to do after you take a Percocet, so I'm just going to. I could see the words. They're there. They have made him ride on the king's mule. Zadok the priest and Nathan the prophet have anointed him king in Gihon. And they have come up from there rejoicing, so that the city is in an uproar with this noise that you've heard. Besides, Solomon has even taken his seat on the throne of the kingdom. Uh oh. You know. Well, we almost made it. Moreover, the king's servant came to bless our Lord King David, saying, may your God make the name of Solomon better than your name and his throne greater than your throne. And the king bowed himself on the bed. Wow. So it's official. You know, the king has done all this in public. David has made his choice. David also... has also said thus, blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who has granted one to sit on my throne today while my own eyes see it. So what he's saying is God chose this. I got to see it, which is even bigger. Then all the guests of Adonijah were terrified. They arose and each went his own way. And Adonijah was afraid of Solomon. And he arose and went and took hold of the horns on the altar. Now, there's a bull on the altar. I didn't bring my little chart. But anyway, and so what he's doing is he's looking for safety, looking for sanctuary, looking for a place where he won't be murdered. And he's hiding in the sanctuary. This is the same guy who is well known that he was going to kill Solomon and Bathsheba. I mean, there was no doubt that that was going to happen. So now he went and hides in the temple, you know, in the sanctuary saying, you know, ollie ollie in free, you know, no take backs. You know, it's just like, I'm here, you can't kill me. Now it was told to Solomon, saying, behold, Adonijah is afraid of the king Solomon, for behold, he has taken hold of the horns of the altar, saying, let King Solomon swear to me today that he will put his servant to death with the sword. King Solomon said, if he is a worthy man, not one of his hairs will fall to the ground, but if wickedness is found in him, he will die. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that makes me let go of the horns of the altar, because I was already planning to kill Solomon and his mother. So, it doesn't bode well. So, King Solomon sent, and they brought him down from the altar. It didn't really work. They went and got him. And they came, and he prostrated himself before King Solomon. Solomon said to him, go to your house. He comes in. He acts humble. He throws himself down in front of him. He bows in front of him. Solomon says, okay, dude, you know, just go home. Which is far more gracious than what he would have got if it had gone the other way. Any questions?
He was his brother, Solomon's brother.
Oh, yeah. Older brother. Okay. He was actually the one who, if you were to do it by lineage, he's the one who probably should have been next. God never works that way. You know, if you just go throughout, I mean, just name them all. David was picked to be king. He was the youngest of all the brothers. You know, it's just how God works. He's the one that sets up that the next in line would be the heir. And then he goes, but yeah, but we're not going to do it that way this time, because God's God. So in general, without God getting involved, it should have been him. The general rule is this. Unless I say different, this is how it should be. Well, he said different. This is how God always, you know. And he always, whenever he goes outside of the prescribed, it's always for a really neat reason. And it's always to make a point that this person is so much better. There's a reason for it, you know. God could have surely orchestrated things that David would have been born first, or that Solomon would have been born first. He just didn't. And he knows exactly what he's doing. And, yeah. Now, the story does not end. As David's time drew near, he charged Solomon his son, saying, I'm going the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore, and show yourself a man. What a charge from a dad to a son, especially a dad that is as bad and as tough as David has been. David has been whooping butt from the time he was a little kid. There has been no peace in his life. I couldn't even begin to count how many people he has killed or been responsible for killing. And your dad says to you, show yourself to be a man. Now, all kinds of things run through your head. You know, gee, Dad, you know, what does that mean? Then David says something really beautiful, which tells you the heart of David. Keep the charge of the Lord your God, to walk in his way, to keep his statutes, his commandments, his ordinances, his testimonies, or according to what is written in the law of Moses, that you may succeed in all that you do wherever you turn, so that the Lord may carry out his promises which he has spoken concerning me, saying, if your son be careful in their way to walk before me in truth with all their hearts, with all their souls, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. That's how he wants him to show himself a man, which is kind of cool. Being a dad with a son, in the end, when they're little, you have all these thoughts of what they're going to be. In the end, the only thing I really want for my son is him to be a better man than me. I mean, if I have a desire and a passion that he be a better man than me, and that has nothing to do with being tougher, it has nothing to do, just a better heart, a better human being. And I think that's what David is wishing for his son. He doesn't want him to join the family business of going out and killing every neighbor that is around Israel. Just be a better man than me. You know, just do it better, kid. That's all I want from you. You know, that's my prayer for you, and I surely understand it. Because as a father, you can go the other way. You could put the things on that you didn't accomplish, and you could try to, you know, form them into, make them into something that you, the things you didn't do, you can try to make them do them, and it's just go watch a midget soccer game or a basketball game, and nothing, you know. And if I may not just take this out of men, just watch mom cheerleaders. I mean, I have literally been called to the high school with my dog because of mom cheerleaders. You know, and when I walked in, the principal said, "Oh, I'm so glad you're here," because they were all hiding from the moms, you know, the cheerleader moms. Just they're just so wrapped up in it, you know, that it's so important. It's more important to them, it seems, than it is to the kid. David is one cool dude. Now I know he has his issues, and he is paying for his mistakes. He is still, as he's dying, he is paying for his mistakes. You know, his two sons are one's trying to overthrow the other, and he knows that if that one wins, he's going to kill Solomon. He's going to kill his favorite wife. That phrase, favorite wife, just doesn't make sense. But anyway, as he's dying, he still doesn't get peace. And it all goes back to what Nathan pointed his finger at him and said a long time ago, "Dude, you're going to pay for this. Rest assured, what you sow, you will reap. God is gracious." And I know I've said this from the pulpit, but I can't say it enough. No matter what happens to me tonight, tomorrow, no matter what befalls me, I got it coming. I know I do. There's no doubt in my mind. There is no set of circumstances, and I am not challenging God, nor am I tempting Satan. I'm just stating a truth. There are no set of circumstances that could align and happen to me tomorrow that I could say I don't deserve it. It is by the grace of God that I have what I have, that I have the peace in my life that I have. I don't deserve it. He loves me. He forgives me. There's still the part, though, where when you do wrong things, there's a price to be paid. You know, the price I've paid is far below what I deserve to pay. I'll just say that plainly and clearly. David knows this. And that's why David is who David is. Anyway, he tells his son Solomon some beautiful things. And he basically tells him, "Look, dude, the biggest thing I could tell you about being the king is follow the Lord." Then he gets political, which is what David is really good at. Remember I said this Sunday, you know, when you're not sure what to do, and I addressed the question that you asked the week before, and from Matthew, where it says, be shrewd. They use the word shrewd, I believe, as a serpent, gentle as a dove or a lamb. And it says because there are wolves out there, because there are people like that, you have to be this way. Be smart, be savvy, but be gentle. Never let love leave. You can do both. You really can. So David tells him the spiritual part, and then comes this part. "Now you also know that Joab, the son of Zeruiah, did to me what he did to the two commanders of the armies of Israel, to Abner, the son of Ner, and to Amasa, the son of Jether, whom he killed. He also shed the blood of war in peace." What a powerful statement. Other than Uriah, David never did that we know of. David had all the power he could have, and no matter what people said to him or anything, he did not use that power. What he's saying here is he used his power in the army to kill people when there was no war. He just killed who he wanted to kill because he wanted to kill him. "And he put the blood of war on his belt, around his waist, and on the sandal of his feet. So act according to your wisdom, and do not let his gray hair go down to Sheol in peace." So this isn't just revenge. It is a little bit of that. Joab has been a thorn in David's side, the necessary evil, I'll use the phrase, of David's rule. There really is no necessary evil. If you trust the Lord enough, you will let go of the gain that you have through the evil. Because David did gain a lot through Joab, through his power, through his political connections. But you're afraid to let that go because you see what you'll lose. Sometimes you just have to lose it. And if it cost you, it cost you. That's tough. But God is more interested in his power being used through you than the power of Joab. What he's saying to him is, "Son, I know," he already knows it, "I know you're wise. Don't let him stay, because he will do the same thing to you he's done to me." this is more than just revenge. This is a heads up to his kid saying, you can't let him live. You can't. He will continue to do this. He will be a burden to you and to your reign. There's also a little bit of stick him once for me. But show kindness to the sons of Barzillai the Gileadite, and let them be among those who eat at your table, for they assisted me when I fled from Absalom your brother. Behold, there is with you Shimei the son of Gera the Benjamite of Bahurim. Now it is he who cursed me with a violent curse on the day that I went to Mananiam. But when he came down to me at the Jordan, I swore to him by the Lord, saying, I will not put you to death with the sword. Now therefore, do not let him go unpunished, for you are a wise man, second time he says it, and you will go down, you will know what you ought to do to him, and you will bring his gray hair down to Sheol with blood. Both of these guys are older now. They think they have gotten away with it. And David, on his deathbed, is settling, well, once again, the Godfather reference, today we settle all family business. Don't tell me you didn't, yeah. Yeah, it ends with your foot going through the windshield. Godfather reference to anybody. Okay. All right. Then David slept with his fathers and was buried in the city of David. So his last words are this. Kill this dude. Be nice to this dude and kill this dude. Gotta go. And you know what? It is sound advice. These people will be a thorn in Solomon's side if he does not deal with them. It is not the fog of war. It's not the fog of politics. It's the fog of power. Because power is what's behind all these things. You know, that's the problem behind politics. It's power. The days that David reigned over Israel, 40 years, 7 years in Hebron, and 33 years he reigned in Jerusalem. And Solomon sat on the throne of David his father, and his kingdom was firmly established. Now Adonijah, the son of Haggithi, came to Bathsheba. Okay, we got time to do this one. This one's cool. Okay, his life has been spared. David's dead. Does that mean something? There's a little bit of influx now. Dave's dead. So people are starting to think a little bit. This little weasel has not learned his lesson. He says, Dave died. There's still an opportunity. I could still do this. Yeah. He comes to Solomon's mother. And I'm not saying she's gullible. She's just kinder. She's a woman. She just has she feels people's burdens. And because of that, I will say she is maybe more susceptible to BS. Because that is what gets laid out here is pure BS. And he says, came to the mother of Solomon, and she said, do you come peacefully? And he said, peacefully. Then he said, I have something to say to you. And she said, speak. And he said, you know that the kingdom was mine, and that all of Israel expected me to be king. However, the kingdom has turned about, and become my brother's. For it was his from the Lord. What a nice thing to say. Yes, I did have it, but God gave it to him. I'm recognizing that with you. Now I am making one request of you. Do not refuse me. And she said to him, speak. So what he's saying is, you know, I had it all, I lost it, he got it, but could you do something for me? She goes, okay, what is it? Then he said, please speak to Solomon the king, for he will not refuse you, that he may give me Abishag, the Shunammite, as a wife. Once again, we all know who Abishag is, the beautiful young lady who kept King David warm. Now, there's a reason he wanted Abishag, not just because she was extremely beautiful, because she was King David's. And servants and concubines and all that sort of stuff could only be transferred royally from one to the other. She couldn't go be the servant of a commoner. She couldn't, you know, none of these things. It would have been, he knows it would be symbolic if he marries Abishag, that it would give him a legitimate claim to David's throne. Abishag, during this whole thing, has done nothing. She's just sitting there. I don't know what she does once David dies, who she's keeping warm, what she's doing. No idea. This poor girl was way up north watching her dad's chickens or whatever, and these guys come by, said, hey, come keep the king warm. Dad said, good idea. She hops on a donkey, drives done, keeps the king warm, and now this dude wants to marry her. And she's done nothing. Just sat there and looked pretty. And the world turns. Bathsheba said, not being politically minded as David was and as Solomon is, said, very well. I will speak to the king for you. Oh, young love. Oh, I'll make this happen. Sure. You know, what a nice thing. We'll all be happy. You know, he'll go away and live with her and they'll have thousands of kids and we'll all be happy. So Bathsheba went to King Solomon to speak to him for Adonijah. And the king rose to meet her, bowed before her, and sat on his throne. And he had a throne set for the king's mother, and she sat on his right. Dude, as soon as he became king, he put a throne for his mom right on his right-hand side. There's a little thing about Jewish sons, you know, that, you know, yeah, okay, little princes, yeah, okay. Just let that go in your mind. Mom has a throne right next to you on the right. Then she said, I will make one small request of you. Do not refuse me. And the king said to her, ask my mother, for I will not refuse you. She said, let Abishag the Shunammite be given to Adonijah, your brother, as a wife. King Solomon answered and said to his mother, and why are you asking Abishag the Shunammite for Adonijah? Ask for him also the kingdom, for he is my older brother. Even for him, for Abathar the priest, and for Joab the son of Zeruiah. He knows instantly what this is. And he's saying to mom, mom, don't you know what you're doing? Why not just help, you know, Joab and Abathar too? Why not bring them all back? And she goes, oh dear. And King Solomon swore by the Lord saying, May God do so to me and more also if Adonijah has not spoken this word against his own life. He knows exactly what's happening. He sees it. He doesn't even see. Instantly he knows what's going on. Now, therefore, as the Lord lives, who has established me and set me on the throne of David, my father, and who has made me a house as is his promise, surely Adonijah will be put to death today. So King Solomon sent Benaniah, the son of Jedidiah, and he fell on him so that he died. We'll end there. This is the fourth of David's sons to die. The prophecy of Nathan has been fulfilled. When David killed Uriah, and David said, he will pay fourfold. Whoever did this, well, it was him that did it. This is the fourth one. And it happens after David dies. And to whom much is given, much is expected. When God gives you that much power, the more he gives you, the more he expects. And he is not shy about telling you that. Be careful what you pray for. There's a little verse where that says, give me my portion. And it's usually talking about money, not so much that I forget you, not so little that I steal, but the prayer should always be, give me my portion in everything. You know my makeup. You know my character. Give me what will suit my character. And please, Lord, continue to mold my character so that I could have more. But there is such a thing as too much of anything. Power, money, all these things. Looks. Anything. There is such a thing as too much. Trust the Lord what he gives you. Put it into his hands and be at peace with it. He knows what he's doing. And we'll end with that. Let's pray.